You're all right, Timbers?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm all right.
Good, good. Enjoying the snacks?
I love them. I could snack myself to death.
Enjoying them. Oh, hello. You've just joined us. We're snacking on some Thai snacks, waiting for a spot of dinner. We've actually
I was hoping I was hoping for a fruity scone.
Afraid not today.
All right. Oh no, I've dropped a Thai snack in the Thai dip and it's burning.
We're celebrating because we've just successfully alphabetized and put in numerical order the vault, which is very...
Oh, I'm amazed!
Yeah. It was amazing. It threw up a few surprises. We've been doing a bit of separating the wheat from the chaff, and we thought we'd let you hear about it, really. But first off, whilst we were in the pub, the Barley Mow in Brighton's Kemptown Village, behind the bar, they sell, as a sort of novelty, because a lot of pubs seek to set themselves apart from other pubs, what the Barley Mow likes to do is to offer a selection of sweets and novelties behind the bar.
I should say some pubs decide to serve good beer, but, you know, they've gone for the
sweets. They do all right. They do Summer Lightning, which was very nice.
They had a good selection.
And what they had is... This is a little curiosity published by...
Don't look at my crotch.
Mr. Lucky Bags Limited. It's the Marvel Heroes Power Lucky Bag. Pochette surprise. Packed with treats, toys and surprises. And at only £1, how could we resist?
Yeah.
It has this... now, I'd like to... If anyone out there... knows who the artist is who does all of the
are you going to scan this, because it's all the Marvel publicity material. You can even see it in adverts in their American comics.
Yes, like all
it's
of
disgraceful.
All of the sort of Marvel merchandise has the same guy doing this sort of horrible sort of
hero clicks as well,
computer, yeah, possibly all this sort of computer artwork, and it's basically the art style is the face of Marvel outside of Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awful.
I know. I mean, for a start, there's no blacks. Do you notice that? I've just realised.
Yeah.
Well, you know, obviously the spider on Spider-Man's chest is black, but there's just no drawing skill. You know, there's no sense of a line around the figures.
It's got these beautifully, smoothly graded sort of highlights and shadows. But they're all put in the wrong fucking place. Like, look at the Hulk's finger there.
I mean, it's just
like it's made out of balls.
Apparently, the Hulk's little... I don't know what you call the bits of your finger that are divided up by small little lines, but where your joints, finger
well,
joints
the joints,
are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what's the bits in between for? But, I mean, the bit that's a flesh, that's probably one of those things there isn't a name for, really. It's like your fingertip. But they actually... Your fingertip... the Hulk's fingertip joint is casting light... on the part of the finger below it.
Yeah, it's really it's terrible, and I think they should sort it out. Really, I'd love to find out the name of this person, just so I can find out what is going on and why they've got
the
job.
It's just a studio. It's just
everyone looks like they're made out of plastic. It's terrible.
It's really unpleasant and not convincing. Well, Iron Man works just about, but the Hulk certainly doesn't.
But anyway, let's get on with reviewing the Marvel Heroes Power Lucky Bag.
Stick your hand in and pull out luck.
All right.
How surprising.
The first object to come out is...
Oh.
Four colouring pencils, not suitable for children under 3 years, made in China, importer, Mr. Lucky Bags Limited, Stoke-on-Trent, ST15NG UK. Please retain for future reference.
Do you mean this is assembled in Britain?
I'm actually not allowed to throw this away. It says, please retain for future reference.
Oh, okay.
It's like they're expecting someone to get killed by these pencils.
And what's worrying me is, the he's an importer, is Mr. Lucky Bags Limited.
Right.
So he didn't, make... But that means this bag has been put together in Britain. So it's a British person producing this.
Yes. It's like Marvel UK.
Yeah.
And actually, it's the state of most children's comics on the racks today. This is pretty representative. It's mostly toys with a bit of paper attached.
Well, is there toys in there? Oh.
Well, there's a badge. There's a actually, I don't mind this. This is quite a nice Hulk badge. It's line art, which is good.
Good. This is only the face of the Hulk, mind, not the classic pose like in olden days when he had some rope that he was. They used to sort of bondage Hulk that used to appear on T-shirts in the 60s.
But you can tell this is like child safe because on the back it doesn't actually have a pin. It just has a sort of plastic hook.
And I want to support that fully because I used to, as a kid, spend my life being stabbed in the fingertips by, you know, I mean, when I used to buy badges.
Dennis the Menace badges.
Yeah, they hadn't actually...
With proper pins.
Yeah, they hadn't actually developed safety catches either. So they actually just stuck out.
Right.
And you'd just stick them down, you know. And I remember the safety little catch where you slip the metal just under a little catch and it stays there. That was a marvellous innovation because prior to that, you'd take off your lovely superhero badge or whatever on your shirt, and you'd find your nipples have been pierced. Later, of course, I'd enjoy that kind of thing.
Yes. So anyway, so we have the Hulk badge. What's next in the bag? We have a lollipop here. It is wrapped in blue cellophane. If we undo it here, it's like a sort of purple and
pink. I think it's supposed to be a sentinel. Do you think it's supposed to be a sentinel?
That is what it looks most like. If I pull the cellophane down like that, it looks like a sentinel in a cape.
Yeah.
It's just... But anyway, that's not particularly Marvel, but hey, what's this?
No, I'm sure that's supposed to be something, though.
We have a Marvel object here. It's a piece of plastic with a spider symbol and Spider-Man's face, which I guess looks kind of like a rubber stamp and a stencil.
I think I've worked this out.
But there's nothing to describe.
No, what you do with them, I mean, it's insane. But I think what you might do is actually, I thought this might be a stamp, and I thought, well, hang on, you have to buy the ink pad to put it on. But no, I think if you put paper over it and rub the pencil.
Ah, right, like a brass rubbing.
Like a brass rubbing,
right.
But a plastic rubbing.
Right, okay, yeah, gotcha.
And you'd get Spider-Man's face.
I guess that's kind of cool, but it doesn't actually say you must do this with it. It's
no,
just
you could,
a sort of random piece of plastic that, you know...
You could throw it in a landfill site or... I don't know.
Yes, I'm sure we won't be doing that.
No, or Jimmy opened a hotel room door with it.
I think we will, actually.
A la the Avengers.
But the final thing, when I first purchased the Marvel Heroes Power Lucky Bag Pochette Surprise, packed with treats, toys and surprises, I could feel something sort of folded and comic-like inside.
It could have been a comic. What a great idea.
A lucky superhero bag.
With a comic in it.
But, unfortunately, no. We have an activity book with more of the same horrible artwork on the front. Mm. It has members of the Fantastic Four, Wolverine, Spider-Man, Daredevil, Hulk, some X-Men and Thor. And it's the Marvel Heroes Superhero Activity Book. This is a nice addition. I think more comics should have this. This book belongs to...
Yes.
And the age of the reader.
Yes, that would be good. So I think Amazing Spider-Man should adopt that.
I'm going to just fill this in now. This book belongs to Gary Lactus. Age 33.
1,000 years old.
Superhero name. I don't have a superhero name.
You do, isn't it? Gary Lactus.
Well, Gary Lactus, but that's my name.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. But anyway, so what do we have inside? First page, we have the Electra colouring page.
That's great. Your kid gets to colour in a sort of girly pic. I mean, okay, at least her outstretched arm is covering up her camp hall assets. But
yeah, and it's not really a proper colouring in picture. The lines are ill defined. In fact, they're kind of bleached out in some places. And
well, I don't think they're expecting an ink job here. They just want some colour. I think the kids would be lucky to stay within the lines basically that are there. I mean.
In its favour, it does have some stats. It has some useful facts, like real name, Electron Natios, nationality, American, superhero powers. Electra is an accomplished martial arts expert trained in the ninja arts. She is also an Olympic-level athlete and gymnast. I think everyone is in the Marvel Universe. And an expert with the Psi and other weaponry. So there we go. We can kind of...
She kills you with a sigh.
Then we have the Tic Tac Hero. It's basically a game of noughts and crosses that one can play with little Iron Man faces or Captain America shields.
Yeah, I think this is.
We have another colouring page here. Daredevil.
Can we comment on the inappropriateness of these colouring things? Because correct me if I'm wrong. One of the problems is that Daredevil is completely red. And the bits that aren't red are pink, which you've got a red crayon for. So effectively, that is just a red crayon.
It's not going to challenge the colourer, is it?
Well,
really.
Or entertain your son or daughter.
Yes, and then there's a sort of decipher the message for Daredevil.
The
answer is save our planet. I don't think Daredevil could do that. He doesn't have the powers.
No, he doesn't.
Then there's a Wolverine colouring page. Lots of colouring pages. But the stats thing is all right. It would get the whoever bought this, it would, you know, might get them interested.
Really?
In who these
statistics.
Who these people are. It's not just a picture that you carry that you colour in.
No.
It becomes more. You know, they have a name. They have a nationality. They're Canadian, and. And they have powers, and you know if that piques your interest, you might want to read more and might want to pick up a comic. Why this isn't a comic, I don't know. Then there's a mega word search, which has some word search.
The thing. And you can't even see much of his pants. So may I just point out that in this pose, so basically orange, and you don't even have an orange crayon given to you. Do you? I don't think. You're stuck, basically. Mm. All orange. All red. And the reason I'm going... Can I explain why I'm going on about this, Gary?
Yes, you can.
Because
yes.
This is a tale from the childhood of Timbers.
Oh, no.
Yes.
These are always terribly harrowing.
I know. It was harrowing, really. We used to go to on holiday to a little seaside town called Newquay in Wales, actually. It's the unfashionable Newquay. But it was fashionable at the time. And we would rent a little apartment above a shop. And it was the very shop where I bought my very first Charlie Brown book. And there was another shop down the road that had DC Comics in it. And that's where I bought my first 60s DC Comics with the little go-fast sort of checks on them and all that kind of stuff.
All right, Grandad, get to the point.
Right. So nice to know that in my old age, my memories of comic buying will be cherished.
Yeah, everyone fucking loves it. Yeah.
So we had to buy... my parents didn't like me buying comics all the time, but we could buy a colouring book each, my brother and I. And he bought one full of things like puppies and clowns. And I thought, no, there was only one thing that was really exciting, and that was Batman. And I bought a Batman colouring book.
Yeah.
Now,
as if to put two fingers up to your parents.
Yeah, as if. And they did, but to be fair to them, and I think you have to, when you blame your parents for causing torment in your later life, you have to realise they were being quite sensible, because they actually, I seem to remember, voiced a certain amount of concern about the pleasurable qualities of a Batman colouring book. And to be fair, they're right, because while my brother went on to produce beautiful, multicoloured pages of little sort of big-eyed dogs with bright collars and little coats and little juggling clowns with multifaceted balls thrown in the air.
Yeah,
I had to basically colour grey and blue. Page
a little bit of yellow
after
on the target.
Page,
on this
yes, page right. After page of grey and blue. And there wasn't much else in the picture. I don't remember there being many bat villains. Just grey and blue.
Hmm.
So I don't think superheroes necessarily make, this is the lesson here, the most colourful of subjects for colouring books.
No, no, no. You know, they're all born of like the four colour process, you know.
Yes. Well, good point, good point. They're not exactly
the
going to.
Colour in the Hulk, all right, green.
Yeah, they ask you to here.
Well, no, this is Tricky Picks.
I think there's an earlier picture of the Hulk, actually.
It's a Spot the Difference, yeah. Spider-Man colouring page, you get
red and blue.
Yeah, but then you've got some, you know,
it's not challenging for a child, and even if the child can actually gain some kind of grim satisfaction with staying within the lines.
Do you know your heroes?
Oh, okay. Come on,
You have to match up the superhero or villain name with their real name.
Yeah, this just isn't spreading the word
Which
of Marvel, is
easy.
It?
I mean, how are they going to know?
Oh,
that?
My favourite all-time colouring character. Think of a character that you could have in a colouring book that a kid would love to colour in. That character would be
the Silver Surfer. Here we have him beautifully rendered in black and white.
Which is pretty much how he looks.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a silver pencil.
Does it have a little touch of blue?
Blue is the traditional shorthand for silver, I suppose, isn't it? So you could do a bit of that.
Bit of shading.
There's a Captain America copy in colour. We have a picture of Captain America on a grid, and you copy that.
There you are. Yeah, they want you to colour in the Hulk.
Crabs got and Captain America colouring page, brilliant. And
this is my favourite thing, by the way.
On the back, you have a little keep out sign for your door handle for your bedroom at home, which is the Hulk, and it says, "Don't come in, I'm angry." And frankly, I might be quite angry if I'd bought this and I was a child.
Well, I'd be extremely bored, but
I'm bored.
I'd be bored and I'd be wanting my money back. But also, I would say this is another example of this terrible computer art where there's some kind of weird light source that means that the tips of Hulk's fingers are literally glowing with light and then random bits of his muscles.
Yeah.
I mean, never mind.
It's awful. You know the art that we're talking about.
Oh, you are going to scan it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to put pictures up on the site. But if anyone can tell us the name of the artist, I'd be really, really grateful because it's been bugging me for years and years now. And I wish they'd stop. So anyway, the vault. Wonderful.
Back in the vault. The vault's all tidy.
Been sorting out the wheat from the chaff.
I never knew I had so many comics beginning with the letter A in there.
Yes, yeah. Although H, as it turns out, I think it was S was the biggest pile.
Yeah.
A lot of Sandman, a lot of Shade.
Shade, yes.
Brilliant Shade. But
how we love Shade and how we eagerly await those graphic novels.
I've just grabbed a handful of the things we're throwing out.
Yeah. This feature has a name, by the way.
What's it called?
Well, I don't know. Remind me. What do you mean, what's it called, drunken fool?
We could call it Unwantitude.
I thought it was Select or Reject.
Oh, Select or Reject. Well, I don't know.
All right, no, it isn't anymore.
It's terrible. We should really work on the format of this.
Yeah.
Be more like Jonathan Ross.
Yeah.
Or some other popular podcast.
Well, we've done that, ringing up Stanley's granddaughter. Telling her we've shagged a mother or whatever it is. But, right.
Okay. So, just literally, completely at random. Swamp Thing, issue 137, written by Nancy A. Collins, drawn by, is it Frank M.? Oh, Russell Brown, B-R-A-U-N, inks by Kindermulder, Braun, yes, colours by Tatiana.
Yeah, I was surprised by this.
I bought these a while back.
I can't believe it.
There was a sort of discount, similar to DCBS in the States. It was a sort of remainder comic book.
Oh, right.
Mail order thing.
Oh,
and you could order loads and loads of comics, and they'd all be like sort of 25p, 30p each. So I ordered loads and loads of these things, but it was always like my Alan Moore and Swamp Thing. You know, that was a seminal read.
Yeah.
So I thought, all right, Swamp Thing. I can't really afford those Alan Moore ones. But there's a load of other Swamp Things here. I bought a load of them. I've got all of the. I've got so many, like, you know, the Animal Mans that Jamie Delano wrote, or which are just boring. But there's these Swamp Things, which.
I never regarded myself as that much of a really focused fan. You know, I'd buy anything. But what I have to say is amazing is that I just didn't buy these ones. I must have, when Alan Moore left, I must have just gone, that's it. I'm not interested anymore. Unless they were non-distributed in Britain. I mean, maybe...
Oh, well, they were.
If you had a comic shop. Yeah. But I can't believe it. I mean, I remember some brief controversy over... I was saying to you a story where Swamp Thing was going to become Christ. Or he was travelling through time. And there was going to be a scene where he was on the cross or something. It was completely tasteless, and DC pretty much said that's enough. And I don't know if that's the last thing they ever did and cancelled it. But I knew nothing about these ones, and in a way, maybe I'm glad because it the art's a bit. Well,
they're pretty forgettable. I mean,
There's nothing going on there, is it?
I haven't reread it.
Well, there is stuff. Arcane has apparently created a clone so he can put his mind in this clone's body, and for this he needs the growing power of the daughter of Swamp Thing. And
I've just noticed it's got John Constantine.
Yeah, John Constantine.
Jesus, Polygon, I always knew you were Two-Face.
Yeah, but apparently he's more than Two-Face because he's got lots of faces.
Yeah.
Hence Polly.
You made a royal bollocks of it this time, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's
supposed to be Liverpudlian. I can never.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The art's not very good. It's trying to ape, I suppose, John Tottlebone's line work. That sort of Gustave Doré style style, but done with
it
line.
Ain't happening.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't have the sort of dynamic of line in it, and.
But it's just before Shade. There's an advert for the start of Shade or something.
No, that's halfway through Shade. This is Vertigo. They were well into Vertigo by this
point. Right, oh right.
Ennis was writing Hellblazer. This was around the time of John Constantine's little two-issue appearance in Shade, The Changing Man, written by Peter Milligan. And this was just a kind of also-ran comic at this point. But you're interested in reading it, are you?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to read all of them.
Right. Well, I'll put them in a pile. You can read them and then decide that actually yes, they should have been.
I love playing with my piles.
There we go.
Right.
Next, Twilight.
Let's not bother with this.
Prestige comic by Howard, written by Howard Chaykin.
Yeah.
Drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, which is lovely. I mean, it looks really nice.
But actually, the fact is, Chaykin can be unreadable.
Yes, he can. And let's keep this brief. It's book 3 of 3. I haven't got the others. What's the point in reading it? I'm gonna have to get rid of that. So I think I don't. Also, if any listeners have any suggestions as to what I should do with these unwanted comics, please do get in contact with mindlessones@hotmail.co.uk.
Hey, I've got one. Born of last year's San Diego trip. Of course, didn't happen this year, did it?
No.
Basically, take it out for the children in Afghanistan.
Well, this is going to help them in some way.
Yeah. They'll learn to appreciate American culture, much like the Archie comics that Archie was going to send out.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think Twilight would turn them on.
I don't know. I think I might put a job lot of bollocks on eBay and see what happens. Next. Jonah Hex, Riders of the Worm and so it's in Vertigo. Back in the day, I just bought anything from Vertigo. This didn't grab me. Much as I like Timothy Truman's art.
Yeah, I remember him from Grimjack. And I had trouble, actually he makes Hex look like his character in Grimjack. Grimjack, I think he's called. Well, I think it was a very mistaken attempt, by the look of it, to turn it into a sort of science fiction story. So Hex versus a Cthulhu-esque octopus or something.
Right.
By the end.
I think horror rather than science fiction, are you not?
Well, you know, space horror, whatever, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and but I much prefer, I mean, the new, by the way, we haven't talked about the new series of Jonah Hex, but if we ever do, it's great.
Yeah, so I've heard, actually. I haven't read any of it.
Very enjoyable.
Anyway, that's going away. Now, Bone. I have the holiday special Bone by Jeff Smith. Now, I am prepared to believe that Bone is a great comic that, you know, that should be read. However, this there's a lot of it. Bone is one of those things like Cerebus, which there's one here, Cerebus High Society. What is it? Cerebus issue 47.
The Moon Rope.
I just can't be asked to go there. I'm gonna get rid of that one now. But Bone, similarly, there's a lot of it, and it's been quite impenetrable for me. I don't know if there's a good place to begin with it, or if anyone could
probably
tell me what's
one.
Great about it.
Or the graphic novel collection of all Bone stories?
Yeah, maybe so. I think they're quite sort of unobtainable now. I don't know. Anyway, it's never grabbed me. And this is... it has 4 pages in it. And the rest is an interview with Jeff Smith. So, no, that's...
Well,
that's not going to grab
what
me.
What I would say about Bone is, especially that, is that would make a better colouring book, don't you think?
It would make a better
colouring book.
Than the Marvel... Than the Marvel Heroes Power Lucky Bag Pochette Surprise.
It would. You could put crayons all over that.
Next we've got Wrath, issue 1, which we covered in a previous podcast. Don't need that. Okay, Ultimate Fantastic Four. I'm getting rid of a whole load of these.
I'm surprised you ever bought it past issue 1.
It was fun, and I've got a special fondness for the Fantastic Four. But this artist, Pasquale Ferri, it's not really inked. It's kind of like looks like they've done the pencils, then upped the contrast in Photoshop and sort of touch them up a bit, and don't particularly like it. And it's written by Mike Carey, who I've always found to be a bit boring, really. Perhaps I haven't read the right stuff by him, but...
Look, there's that artist again on that advert.
I know, he's everywhere.
Keep it and put the advert, and you've just gone past it again.
No, but you don't have to, because you go through it and you'll just find more. Next...
We will be getting onto ones we're keeping, I
Infinity
think,
Infinity Inc., Issue 1. I bought a few of these. This is the Peter Milligan written relaunch. It was alright, but it wasn't good enough. And like most things that Peter Milligan writes, with the odd exceptions, such as Shade and X-Force/X-Statics, and his recent run on Hellblaze has been brilliant. I've really enjoyed it. It just didn't do it. It wasn't really there. Wasn't that into the art. Yeah, it's just a bit throwaway, really. But, however, we have...
Oh, my Lord.
What?
Well, they've got an advert here for Smallville. I know we don't normally talk about media-related things, but something terrible's happened in Smallville recently. The advert's more heroic than ever, because they've got Cyborg, and they've got whoever he is. Aquaman? Aquaman, they pronounce
Aquaman.
It. Aquaman. They pronounce it in the States. And they've got Green Arrow, and they've got Kid Flash or something like that, or the Flash. But there you are. They're all back. But
that's Cyborg.
Yeah.
He's just wearing a silver coat.
Yeah.
Body warmer.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think it is, though.
Yeah.
And now what's happened is really terrible. Is the lead actor has just become incredibly plain. You know when you cast a cast and they hang around for like 7 years or more, and they age, don't they, in the role? And Superman...
I've heard he's chunked out a bit.
Yeah, well, it's not just that he's chunked out, though. he's actually, because I mean, he should go down the gym. But crucially, what's happened is he's matured, and what's happened is his high cheekbones and his jawline and everything that made him look sort of a little bit dishy or whatever, he's just become a sort of young Richard Briers, a sort of really, no, that's a bit, yeah, nonsense if you know the actor, and British actor, comedy actor, but he's just become a rather very, very plain bloke who you would cast as the neighbour who lends you his axe to chop wood. Or, you know, somebody who...
Are you desperately trying to think of a normal thing that happens in normal people's lives?
Lives, yes. Yeah, I am.
The best you can
do.
No,
but in the movies, you know, because you see a lot. You know, so you might be, I don't know, your character might be leaving their house and their neighbour is polishing their car.
Hmm.
And you say, hi, neighbour, and he goes, hi there, and that's their role gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you would never cast this guy as a lead in a TV series now. And it's quite odd, and you just keep looking, and you look at them desperately trying to find angles to shoot him from, where they can get his jawline back.
He'd make a great Clark Kent, but not a Superman.
Yeah, basically. Right. And what they've had to do is introduce this ridiculously muscle-bound Green Arrow, who's sort of like, what happens?
I've heard he constantly takes his top.
Yes, I was going to say, it's never since the Tomorrow People, British... kids sci-fi show. They introduced in this kid show, The Tomorrow People, they introduced a character from called Mike, and he was part of a boy band called Flintlock, and they used to take his shirt off all the time. So he used to have shark teeth necklaces and things like that. Very.
Right. You remember this in great detail.
Yeah, I do. Because what happens is he used to bang his head, and he'd go, I think John's injured his head, and they'd lay him down and unbutton his shirt. You're like, I'm sorry, it was brains in his nipples or something. and anyway, exactly. They've got the same scenario going on with Green Arrow.
Right. Anyway, what else do we have? We have Hup, which is...
We're keeping this, by the way.
Yeah, we're keeping that. Oh, yeah.
Select or reject. That's
yes.
The thing. Select
so in
or
the select,
reject.
In the keepsies pile... We just went through. Actually, we went off the because they're all sort of arranged in alphabetical order.
So we went from D to M to H.
We off the top of the H pile is Hup, which is a Robert Crumb comic, and it's a Robert Crumb comic. You don't get rid of that, do you?
No, because
right.
Crumb's whatever else
it's all right.
He
you've
is. Ne-
you've
a
never,
great
you've
illustrator.
Never got along with the
I'm not. Look, I mean,
Crumbverse.
Crumboverse. Yeah, yeah. I haven't got a countercultural dropout, druggy bone in my body. Basically, I don't think I've got any bone in my body, but I don't have that. And you know, I don't get it. I mean, I'm not interested. Mr. Natural turns up in a couple of the strips and. He's an arsehole. The people he's talking to are arseholes. Everybody's arseholes. It's really kind of like he captures something about very very cheesy America there. What's that? That's Stan
Schnooter. Yeah, he's on the cover. Hey fanboy, grow up. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Listen, you gonna waste your whole life looking at that superhero crap? Come on, grab yourself a real adult comic right here. Go on, pick it up. And there's a buxom woman saying, don't be afraid.
But you see, I was afraid. And as a result, I ran off to read more superhero comics. And there's a kind of strip on the back called Don't Worry About It or something, which I'm thinking of enlarging and putting on my office door. But,
yeah,
and
good,
there's
you know,
stuff about him fondling women with
Crumb.
Thighs. I mean, he's pure, you know. He goes,
ah, yeah, yeah. Well, you have to. You
no,
have
I love
to,
it. I know. I mean,
you have to wade through all that stuff with Crumb.
Yeah, you do.
You have to.
All that. I want to ride women around and strangle them, and God knows what else. And the documentary's great if you haven't seen it. I expect you will have.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Next, off the top of the M pile, we found. Mystery Men comics, written by Bob Burton. My Flaming Carrot being one of my favourite things ever. This was Bob Burton writing about his sort of minor characters around the time of the Mystery Men movie that came out, trying to cash in on that. And
it's almost laughable, actually.
It's not drawn by him,
no.
But it's pretty competently drawn by
a variety of people. Actually,
yeah. In issue one, we have Mr. Stephen Sadowski doing pencils. I really like it. It's got the Strangler, who's just a hard case in a hood. It's got the Hummer, who just spends the whole thing. They pick him up. He's drunk. They put him in the back of the car, and he just stays there throughout the whole thing, pretty much. And the Spleen, who's a bit sort of damaged.
Oh, he's the only one who made it to the movie, I think. The Spleen did, yeah.
Yeah, quite possibly. The Metro Marauder, who we see at the beginning trying to get his car started. I like its take on what if superheroes were real. Because it's, you know, if you're going to spend your time superheroing, you're not going to make much money, are you? So they're all kind of deadbeats. They all got shitty cars, or and they live in these awful dives. They've all got hangovers. It's kind of like, you know, they've got to be on some kind of benefits, really, in order to fund this lifestyle. And they all look a bit scuzzy and horrible. It turns out they have to dispose of a body because an interrogation went wrong and the Strangler took someone's head off by accident. They pick up the Hummer, he's been drinking, it's 7 in the morning, smells of gin, so they put him in the back of the car. They go to a junkyard where, alright, just what are we looking for? Some kind of thing, man. Some kind of monster. People been seeing it around the area the last few days, sighted in this scrapyard. Well, what does it look like? What are its powers? What does it do? I don't know. What are we supposed to do with it? I don't know. Arrest it? Kill it? And so they wander around, they split up, and they've got weapons, and they're just incompetently wandering around, and they find the monster, it's asleep. So they just decide to shoot it with a rocket grenade, and it kind of wakes up then, and so they shoot it again, and then it runs off, and then they sort of chase it around and try and keep shooting it, and eventually at one point they put a kick me sign on it, and it does eventually, after all this provocation, get a bit annoyed with them and starts chasing them. But it's quite slow, so they're just running away really easily. And then eventually they manage to properly kill it. And that's the end. It's a kind of anti-adventure.
Yeah. Well, yes.
That's issue number one. Number two is not a particularly funny, straight-up story. It's kind of like the origin of Discman. The amazing Discman,
and it's telepathically controlled discs.
Yeah, it's kind of, compared to issue one, which was a lot of fun, yeah, is pretty inconsequential.
Yeah,
I think I'm keeping it anyway because it's a whole run.
Yeah, and I think what's amazing is apparently they released figures to go along with the movie, and you could actually buy little action figures.
Yeah, I've got a Flaming Carrot figure.
Oh yeah, I mean I'd like that. I think I bought that for somebody. It's got taking a stand against the forces of evil after you take them out of the package, of course. Read the comics, see the movie, buy the figures. It's the American way.
Hmm.
But anyway, I enjoyed Mystery Men number 3.
All right. Yeah.
And I won't go into too much detail because it focuses on Screwball, who's apparently some alien filled with, you tell me, with Weetabix.
He's shredded wheat.
Shredded wheat. He's filled with shredded wheat.
Yeah, he's an alien. He's a mysterious alien. He's out of all of the Mystery Men characters, he's turned up the most in Flaming Carrot regular.
Yeah.
Comics.
Yeah, and I mean, I read it, but anyway, apparently, Screwball. We're informed that Screwball doesn't sleep in a house, but always makes a burrow to live in wherever he goes. So he wakes up in the morning, but somebody's eaten his figs, and he strongly suspects it's a hedgehog, so he kills it. He then sort of goes on a little bit of an adventure. He wants to eat people's junk mail, so he goes to try and find something to go with this feast. Then he buys some, with nothing better to do, he buys some pants American pants, this is, so they're trousers to us. some cotton dockers. And this leads to a little bit of tension.
Actually, this is one thing about Bob Burden. He makes a lot of sort of cultural references that I'm just never going to get as an English as an Englishman.
Right, because you wouldn't know that pants meant...
Well, no, cotton dockers.
Oh, no, cotton dockers.
I
no.
get the impression that, like, that there'd be some resonance that someone who knew what cotton dockers were...
A bit,
you know,
like
that would
Fruit of the Loom underwear or something. Or
yeah, what? Oh, no, that's an American thing. But,
yeah. No, that's what I mean.
I'm trying to think of a British equivalent, like...
well, oh, a British equivalent.
I've probably done them unconsciously all the time. But,
would be anything from Marks and Spencer's, really. Blue Barber. Yeah, anyway, he buys these cotton dockers, and it causes a little bit of tension, a bit of sinister sort of moments, because out of the side of his eye, Screwball notices the sullen salesman eyeballing him through the window, resentful that he is enjoying his pants. And anyway, Screwball soon sorts him out, points at him and shouts, "Hey!" And the sullen salesman goes back to his chores, even unhappier than before. Mm. Later he becomes involved in a murder mystery. He sorts out some tramps, basically. Some hobos are arguing about whether there are more even or odd numbers in the world. Screwball says there's even. Then Screwball's favourite part of the Daily Patrol is writing, "I need a bath and wash me," with his finger on dirty cars and trucks that he sees. So we've all seen that, so now we know who does it. Screwball. Finally, he finds a murder, and it's actually gondoliers have killed this person with their poles. He goes and tracks them down and fights and confronts them. But they have a kind of reasonable explanation for all this. They beat him up a bit in the mud and all that, and get his cotton dockers really absolutely filthy dirty. But they explain to him, "We get a last, a big storm blows us out to sea. We turn to grime to survive." Screwball just goes, "I see. So you're not really criminals, just desperate, misguided wanderers." I like that. That's a nice sort of...
Yeah, it's a nice Stan Lee type.
Yeah. And it reminds me also of the 60s Adam West, really, sort of... desperately misguided. Anyway, then he has a run-in with, you know, some kind of Cupid, basically. But then, just as you think the story can't get more random and just ordinary and sort of directionless, he suddenly gets a letter, much as we sometimes get in the vault, and he discovers that all these leprechauns have been killed in Ireland, and he's shown them all on the table, and there's a whole line of little dead leprechauns, and
they look like action figures.
Yeah, and he goes, "Leprechauns," and this guy who's called him over there, who's naturally red-headed and in a green waistcoat and check shirt, says, "Leprechauns, all dead, and more every day." And Screwball's just pointing and going, "What's this one?" You're left wondering. Oh, no, hang on, we have an answer. Oh, that's a G.I. Joe doll. I don't know how that got there. So there we are. Much like, in Britain, G.I. Joe's called Action Man, and much like I was watching an episode of Doctor Who and the Deadly Assassin, and the evil master has shrunk a Time Lord and stuffed him into a camera, and that we discover that he's actually, we look at it, get a quick glimpse of him, and he's an action man. Like a G.I. Joe doll.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, there's some...
Well,
kind of,
it would save time in the props department.
Yeah, universe crossover there. So there you go, Mystery Men, woohoo!
Hooray!
I saw the movie.
And I think the last thing that I pulled off the top of the D pile is Duplex Planets, which was a project by David Greenberger. I think he started it in the late 70s. He basically worked in an old people's home. He transcribed or recorded his conversations with them.
Oh, right.
Years later, he gets various comic artists to adapt these into comics. It's good. It's a good, worthwhile thing. I've got issues 1, 3, 5, 9 and 10. Issue 1 has a cover by Dan Clowes. There's a lot of great talent here. Issue 10 has a cover by Pete Bagg. I think it might even have some work inside.
No, it doesn't. No, it looked like Bagg, but it wasn't.
But some of them are great. You know, some of them are... It probably suffers by sort of really verbatim transcriptions of the original, what these inmates, I want to say.
Yeah, I think
residents
originally said. I'm a bit. I know this is going to sound tediously PC, but I'm kind of dubious about it. Really, in fact, there's a panel where he looks to one side in the middle of an old man's story and sort of looking at you like, yeah, the guy's just rambling on like a crazy loon. I think the sad thing is, in a way, because of the people he talks to, unlike say American Splendor, which sort of makes people really come alive and somehow you value them for their weirdness. In these, you just sort of want to just send them on their way and usher them quickly to the graveyard. I just don't feel he really makes any of these people's lives that intelligible. They're all right to read. They're fun. They're provocative. The illustrations and the variety of illustration is really good.
Yeah.
But I never come away thinking I've met someone I could understand or would want to spend time with or, you know, anything like that.
Right, okay.
I don't know about you.
Yeah, well, it has its moments, is all I'm saying. And
it's like the senile...
And it's quite a unique project, which is why it's in the keepsies pile.
Oh, yeah, it's worth keeping.
There's one, My First Funeral, which is... David Greenberger in 1979 escorting one of the residents to the funeral of one of the other residents.
That's the one strip I like.
It's sort of very rambling and he's driving them there and the old guy's just saying kind of random stuff and you think, where's this going? And it has this great punchline which, you know, spoilers. I'm going to read it out.
When the
minister was through, he asked if anyone else wanted to say anything. And there's a few panels of silence, and the old guy puts up his hand. Arthur Wallace stepped forward, and at this, the first funeral I was ever at, said, Arthur Brown was a good man. He didn't like bananas, though. Whenever one would come up on the tray for dessert, he'd come into my room and give it to me. Funny thing, he didn't like bananas. Bananas are my number two fruit. And then there's a little pause. My number one fruit is big, mild pear. Finished, he stepped back, stood beside me at the funeral service, and it was over. Which I really like.
Yeah,
at least
I like
that.
You know,
he's the only guy who said something.
Yeah.
He's just said what he knew about him. And,
yeah.
You know, he didn't like bananas.
Yeah. I like that. There's a more random story with the same character.
And
also,
Duplex Planet issue 1, comes with a little flexi disc, which I've never wanted to pull out and play because it just seems so special, isn't it? But it's got a fucking record in it.
Yeah.
It's got a double-sided... 7-inch record.
Actually, they should have done that with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Well, that was the plan.
Oh, was it?
They didn't go for it. It was recorded.
Okay.
Did you have something to...
I have nothing to add except that it's nice, but it's not, you know, it doesn't quite hit the right note with me because I'd kind of like these people to be redeemed in some way at the end of their lives and be remembered for maybe... the people they were, rather than...
But life's not like that, is it? And it's not trying to do that, it's just trying to represent...
Life's not like that.
No, well, no, they're not. Like, God, you know, I'd considered my aunt dead when, like, I was sitting down at her birthday and she had to say to one of my relatives, who's that?
Right,
you know,
I know what you mean. I considered my mother...
You know, that flames flicker and die slowly. And sometimes they're not full of people's last words aren't incredibly poignant or amazing. No, you know, no. It's just.
No, I mean, I know what you mean, because, like, I mean, I considered my mother dead when she failed to buy me a Dalek costume for one birthday.
Oh, but... the fucking bitch.
Yeah, no. But no, it just come across as, like, senile people say the silliest things. And, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. I think, I mean, and that's kind of where it succeeds and where it fails. Sometimes people are just saying anything, and you're thinking, kind of, why is this being said?
Yeah, some of it just goes into the realms of weird.
They're just giving you what's said.
Yeah.
And I think the only problem with it is that David Greenberger is not drawing it himself. Either he doesn't have the ability. You know, so he's just turning over this text for people to interpret.
Right.
And I think quite often they're interpreted well, sometimes they're interpreted badly. I think a lot of the time they don't really need to be interpreted at all. I think they just need to exist as transcripts or...
good point.
Or better still, audio recordings.
Good point.
Really. I'd just like to hear these people.
That I would like to hear
and draw
these
my
people.
Own conclusions.
Yes.
And not have someone...
And not your own comic.
Illustrate it. But, you know, a good and noble comic it was. And if I saw any more, I'd fill in my gaps.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the world of comics is a richer place for...
Yes. So, are we done?
We're eyeing this. Are we going to leave this one
for
another?
Are we really going to talk about Asterios Polyt? It's really good. I like it. It's good. I don't particularly feel like talking about
it. I do. Though. I want to say something. Oh, really? I'll tell you
no,
what.
No, I want my dinner.
Yeah, well, are we actually holding up dinner, Gary, here? Or
I don't
think it's out there ready to come swooping
so.
In.
I do need a wee.
Well, just... Well, you and computer games, just leave it. You've got to
Why don't I leave you here?
I'm not going to talk
about...
Oh, you bugger, no.
Oh, God, I found another thing.
Oh, great. Warlord. That could go straight into the bin.
Yeah, I'm getting rid of a load of Warlords. I don't know why I've got those.
I've given it to you. What is it? A1. Lord, that was a
A1. I loved the original A1. British, published by Atomica.
Yeah. What's this then?
This was A1 done again by Epic Comics.
So it's got a Silver Surfer story and a really profound thing about the thing.
It's got a story written by Pete Milligan, drawn by Jamie Hewlett. With the brilliant Glyn Dillon and Philip Bond helping him out.
Hooray!
And
no more Clark.
I've got issue 4, and I haven't got the others. So, like, I'm going to keep that because I want to get the rest of those, because that's a Milligan and Hewlett story that
if anyone can help Gary
hardly
out
ever,
with this,
is hardly ever
he's
seen.
He's gone off into a...
That's a special thing, that is. And it's got some fucking great Roger Langridge stuff in
Calm
it as well.
Calm yourself, Lactus.
It's fantastic, and it's all beautiful. There's some sort of a pretentious bit of Dave McKean there about Dizzy Gillespie.
I remember when people can't give a toss about that.
I don't dislike Dave McKean. I still really like Cages, but this is just a bit. But yeah, that's good. That is
okay, Lactus.
well,
Thai green planet awaiting you in the kitchen.
Oh, lovely! I can't wait. Yes, let's go. Not only do I need a wee, but we need to clear this table off because Mrs. Lactus is going to serve dinner soon.
Yo.
So that just leaves me to say, keep it cosmic.
Yeah, and
like a cunt.
I'd just like to say that even though I'm approaching senility, I hope you will still feel able to respect my fandom.